Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Fave Yogis. You guys have been hearing about Fave Yogis for a number of weeks now, so I hope that you've checked them out. If you haven't heard about them, it's a business tool that's really going to change the lives of yoga teachers. Do you teach yoga? Then this is the app for you. The Fave Yogis app puts control and freedom in your hands. Update your class schedule, offer your own classes anywhere, anytime, and get paid all from your phone. No more updating your schedule in multiple places for students to maybe stumble across it. Students simply open Fave Yogis and your schedule will be there. With Fave Yogis, you can receive donations or tips from students, send students notifications about class updates, set prices and ticket availability, and auto send reminders to students. Just your yoga, teachers add classes, students add teachers. Students and teachers stay connected. You can head on over to the App Store on any device and get the Fave Yogis app entirely for free. It's Fave Yogis. And when you go there, make sure you use code MBOM and let them know that I sent you. Now, before we dive into today's episode of the podcast, I have two more things that I want to talk about. The first is that I'm really excited about a brand new podcast, video series, and course that I have out there called Yoga Business Bootcamp. It's 12 modules. It's designed to take you from designing your dream job all the way to building sales funnels so you can really begin making more income in your business. We talk about websites, marketing, selling yourself, building a resume, and so much more. If you are not so sure about the course, you can head over to iTunes or you can check out the link in the show notes on MBOM. And you can find Yoga Business Bootcamp by MBOM. You can also head over to our YouTube channel and find it there. It has all the information that you need and much more. Or you can head on over to mbomyoga.com/yogabusinessbootcamp and find out a little bit more information for that there. My final announcement before we dive into this episode of the podcast is that I'm super, super excited to be one of the business coaches or one of the teachers for the Yoga Goddess Academy teacher training. So if you're interested in starting a teacher training and being able to do it from anywhere in the world, this is a really, really amazing training for you. Of course, if you have any questions, you can reach out at info@mbomyoga.com. Otherwise, you can find more at http://bit.ly/Amanda YTT. If you're driving and you're like, I just totally missed that, it'll be up on the show notes at mbomyoga.com. Now, on to today's episode of the podcast. I am super excited to be joined by Justin Cooper from Kula Wellness. Justin and I connected in a podcasting group since he's also the host of a great podcast, and I'm really, really lucky to be able to chat with him. He came from a fitness background, he's dove into yoga, and he's really been able to build a successful business for himself in the fitness, yoga, and wellness space. So we talk about a lot of different topics from working in the yoga community, building a business online, running retreats, and so much more. So without further ado, here's Justin. I'm very excited to be joined on the podcast today by Justin Cooper, who is the founder of Kula Wellness. Welcome to the show today, Justin.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
That's good. And where are you joining me from today?
I am in San Jose, California.
Oh, nice. I've never been there before, but you're pretty close to the Mexican border then, right?
Well, that would be a little more south, like San Diego, California.
Okay.
So I'm a little more north. I'm like 8 hours north of San Diego, near San Francisco.
Okay,
so cool. So like right in the heart of Silicon Valley.
Oh, nice. Amazing. And so I want to back up and talk about how you first got into yoga and fitness and wellness and all of that stuff before we dive into what you do now. Can you tell me a little bit about your background with yoga and fitness?
Yeah, for sure. So like many people, I mean, I was an athlete playing basketball and like running track throughout, you know, middle school and high school. So definitely being physically active was something that has just always been a part of my life. around, I guess in college, maybe a little before when I like more seriously started actually working out as opposed to just playing sports. I started getting more serious, like in a gym type setting. And then at some point in there is when I kind of just stumbled upon yoga, and started initially taking like a yoga class that was offered at the gym that I went to, which I think it's safe to say that you, anybody who does take yoga classes and has taken gym classes versus like studio classes, there is a, I feel like a pretty distinct difference between like, gym class yoga and studio yoga. But so that's where I started. And I just kind of noticed that it made me, it just made me feel good. And whether I did, whether I took the yoga class before I worked out and lifted weights, or if I did it after I lifted weights, both seemed to have a very positive effect. So it was something that I consistently did. And then eventually I seeked out a studio that was in my town, and I started going there. And it was just a very, there was a very strong sense of community, and like being in a class and all of the teachers there were very kind of inspirationally themed. And it kind of blew my mind a little bit and really opened me up to a whole nother world. And I was like, whoa, like what is this? What's going on over here? So I did, that studio had like, I forget, it was either like a 30 or 40 day challenge of, it was basically in that intro for new students, but I took it as an opportunity to go as many times as I could in that first 40 days that I had at that studio. So I was waking up almost every morning and going, they did hot yoga as well, which that was a, you know, new experience to me as well. And I just went as much as I could throughout that first month. And it just, that just continued to be something that I knew that I would always do or that I would continue doing. So there have obviously been times that I did less of that than, you know, in those 30 days, but it was very clear that like, this is something that I should be doing in my life and that makes my body feel good. And, you know, it's good for me mentally and spiritually as well. So I continued with that. And then I guess we can get into this part. So after a little while of kind of after I graduated college and was just kind of working in the restaurant industry, doing that thing, I really had a feeling that there was a calling for something like more that I should be doing with life. Not that there's anything wrong with the restaurant industry, but I felt like I was like, I want something more fulfilling. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really know what to do. And I really only knew, so I knew the restaurant industry and how to make money in the restaurant industry. And then I knew how to go to school. So I started looking up kind of what I wanted to do. I had a sense that I wanted to help people live happier and healthier, but I didn't really know what that calling would be. And I stumbled upon a holistic counseling psychology master's program. So in my mind, it kind of fell directly into everything that I was thinking about. And I wanted to incorporate fitness and nutrition into a like therapy practice. So I thought, perfect, there's that, that's my calling. That's what I want to do. So at that time I was living in New Jersey. I packed everything that I had into my Mustang and drove across the country, and started school for this master's program in counseling psychology.
Where was the master's program?
It actually in San Jose, California, at a university called John F. Kennedy University.
Okay.
Yeah. So I thought that was it. And I started doing that, and I started, working in a restaurant when I got out here as well, just to, you know, to pay the bills. That's the only real way that I knew how to make money. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, so I didn't want to take out any loans for school either. So I was like really working hard. I was putting in a lot of all of my time was taken up in between school and work and just school and work. And that's all I was doing. And then, but of course I maintained my own practice of working out and going to the gym. So I'd find, you know, there'd be a few hours in the morning where I was at the gym and you know, working out, spending my time there. That was kind of my, you know, my one time and moment in the day that kept me sane, I felt like. And at some point I was like, I was just having that thought. I'm in the gym already. Like, why don't I maybe just start training like one or two people in the morning to, you know, to just add to my income. And like, I feel like I'd really like that. So I started doing personal training as well. And then eventually the personal training business kind of kept growing, and it grew to the point where I could stop working at the restaurant and I was making enough money. And I thought that was amazing, because I was like, oh, I found another legitimate source of income that like I actually like doing. And this is awesome. This is amazing. And then it kind of just kept growing until I felt like, or I was noticing the ability to make at least comparable money doing personal training as I was expecting to make as a psychotherapist, like 3 years down the line and, you know, 50 grand of tuition later. So, again, I made another big pivot and I stopped going to school and I just started pursuing personal training full time. So I was doing that for a while. I actually ended up starting to teach a yoga class at the gym that I was working at before I had even gone through any of my yoga training, which apparently gyms just let people do that. So, I mean, I had a little bit of pull because I was a personal trainer there already, but, and I guess they needed somebody and I was like, I can do this.
You're like, sure, practice yoga, you know, it's fine.
Why not? Yeah. Like, and believe me, taking classes there already, I was very much in the mindset of, you know, I don't know how well I can do this, but I know that I can do it better than what they were offering.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I started doing that. And then eventually, at this point, I was working for a larger company still. I was like working for a company doing all this training and teaching. And I knew that I wanted to get out of that. So I took advantage of an opportunity to leave there. And I actually went to Southeast Asia and traveled around there for 6 months. And during that time, I got my yoga teacher training completed. And I did like a Vipassana meditation retreat and a few other things. I took a lot of cooking classes while I was there or whatever, but also just kind of messed around and had fun traveling around the different countries. But with all this, with the mindset of, okay, like when I got back, I was going to start my own company and be completely on my own. Like that was the goal. So I was working on that a little as I was out there. And then, yeah, that's exactly what happened. I came back, I started this company, Kula Wellness. Also actually with my partner, who I met her in that same master's program that I started. So since then she has completed the program and she is, now a licensed marriage family therapist. So we started this company together, kind of bringing it full circle with that original thought that I had where I wanted to incorporate fitness and nutrition into a therapy practice. But now instead of into my therapy practice, I get to partner with someone and we're working on integrating it into her therapy practice. So that was kind of a long story, but that brings you up to speed.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing all of that. I'm curious, when you decided to go to Southeast Asia, did you go with the intention of getting your yoga teacher training, or were you kind of going just like to have some space away from, you know, school and work and all of that sort of stuff?
I did know that I was going to do my teacher training there, but also to get some space. It actually worked out that I have a few good friends who I've done a lot of traveling with. And, you know, it's kind of part of that dynamic. We're always talking about where the next place we're going to go is going to be. And so with that group of friends, they were talking about potentially going to Southeast Asia and doing like the Philippines and Thailand, Vietnam, and wanting to make that trip. But then, of course, there's always that pull and in my mind of like, okay, well, if I'm going to go over there, you know, it's the most expensive part is getting there. Mm-hmm. So if I go over there, I want to spend as much time as possible before I come back. So there was that trip they were kind of planning. And then as well as I was thinking about doing my yoga teacher training, and my my girlfriend, who I mentioned earlier, she also kind of had the idea of doing her yoga teacher training in Bali. And it was something that she was kind of talking about. And just the way that the dates lined up, I noticed that there was about, you know, 3 months or so in between the two. So in my mind, I said, okay, well, I'll go with my friends. I'll spend the month there with them. And then I'm just going to stay there until our yoga training, and we'll do another month, and then we'll spend some time after that and travel around together a little as well. And that ended up being like a, you know, a 6 month span or so.
Yeah. It's crazy how fast time can fly when you're, you know, planning travels and destinations and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's, it was certainly a crazy thing to do that I, even up until the moment when I was like actually about to do it, I was like, oh, I guess I'm about to just leave for 6 months. Like, I don't know. Like it didn't seem real. It didn't seem to like really sink in until I was actually over there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know the feeling as well. I think that, I mean, I've been gone for 6 months or longer on 1, 2, 3, 4. This is my fifth time doing it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, since I guess 2011 when I did it the first time. And it's kind of like weird. Like I know what to expect now because it's like the same every time. But every time it feels really weird. It's like I don't really trust that I'm going, I guess, until I actually get on the plane and then I'll arrive in a destination. I'm like, okay, I'm here. I guess this is happening. Okay. It's definitely a weird experience.
Yeah, it's very unique. But it's also, I mean, that's part of what makes it great and fascinating as well, because there's nothing you can't, I feel like a big part of that is that you can't know what to expect until you're there. So there's no way to like prepare yourself for it, you know?
Totally.
And that's so cool being able to explore the like new territories where you have no idea what to expect or what's going to happen or who you're going to meet. And you kind of just have to react to everything on the fly. Like that's such such an attractive thing to me for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah, I 100% agree. I have friends who just are not interested in it at all. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know how you don't feel this desire to do this.
Yeah, there are a lot of people where that's just not their thing also. So that's cool. I'll do twice as much traveling for them.
Totally. Yeah, I'm fine with that as well. And so while you were over in Southeast Asia and you started making these plans for your business, you know, what were you kind of hoping for with Kula Wellness?
I just wanted the ability to kind of control my own destination and my own fate and not be confined by, you know, other people's rules and other people's images and things. Because like while I was doing personal training at another gym, which is kind of, it's funny that working in a gym is kind of my corporate experience because there's like a big corporate box gym. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everything that comes along with that, with, you know, they have a certain image that they're trying to portray, and people who go into that gym looking for personal training have a certain idea of what training is going to be. And it just wasn't completely in line with like what I would like to do. And I like to dive into like more aspects of my clients' lives than just the, you know, the 4 or 5 hours that they spend in a gym a week. So that was kind of, it was kind of frowned upon to talk about like nutrition and lifestyle things in that setting. So I really wanted to be able to break free of those bounds and do what I could to help people, you know, to the highest extent that I felt like I could. And I felt like it was being limited. So I wanted to be able to kind of express myself and my knowledge fully while helping people. And then as well as, you know, building my own schedule and not worrying about like the numbers that the company wants me to hit and things like that, but being able to build it in a comfortable way where, yes, of course I'm making enough money, but also I have, you know, a good work life balance where I'm not just at the gym from, you know, 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. at night every day. So that was kind of the inspiration of what made me want to start my own business.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I can 100% relate to that. And when you got back, what was the process like to actually start the business and get clients and start getting classes and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it was, it was really just putting myself out there. I know that sounds a little oversimplified, but, you know, first thing that I did was I contacted all of my previous clients that I did have when I was working at the other gym, because it made it a lot more difficult. If I were to just make that jump and like leave a big box gym like that and then just start training on my own right away, I probably would have been able to retain, you know, like 80% of my clients or so and just move them over to another gym and everybody would be cool and happy. And that would be a great start and a spot to leap forward from. But after leaving for 6 months and then coming back, you know, a lot of things happen. So it's a lot harder to retain that clientele. But I hit all them up, you know, I got maybe like 3 or 4 of them that were like ready to start training with me again, which was awesome. And then it was just a matter of, you know, continuing to make calls, you know, doing the social media thing, as well as really getting the website kind of up and running and trying to do all of the review type sites that that are very helpful. So like starting to build somewhat of a presence on Yelp and like starting a Groupon campaign to help draw people in, and, you know, doing Google reviews and having Facebook page, just starting like really putting, and a lot of that foundation I kind of had laid, but then you really have to build it up with your clientele of, okay, well, like leave me reviews here, leave me reviews there, you know, like this, share this, whatever, to start that snowball rolling so that you then have some, at least somewhat of a steady flow of clients coming to you from, you know, the outer reaches of the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's so much harder than it actually sounds. Like it's a lot easier to just be like, yeah, I started putting myself out there and that sort of thing. It's definitely a lot more goes into it than that.
Yeah, there's so many facets of it. There's so many, you know, even if it was just one of those things, like, okay, like really build up a Yelp page so that when people search personal trainers in your area, like, you know, you're near the top, but it's not quite that easy. And there is a lot of competition. So it's like, well, still what's going on there? And that might bring in some, but that takes, you know, 6 months, a year to kind of build up to anything anyway. So trying to create as many funnels as possible and ways for people to find you, I feel like is what helped me the most. Like just continue, you know, not put all my eggs in one basket, but kind of put a lot of feelers out there to kind of attract as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And were you teaching yoga as well, or do you teach yoga as well right now?
Yes, I'm also teaching yoga. So at a few different, at a couple different studios and gyms, and then a few corporate gigs as well. So like going to some companies. So that's a big thing out here. Like, I believe I mentioned earlier, I'm in the middle of Silicon Valley. So like all of those apps and, websites and all the computer things that everybody uses, like all of them are made here pretty much. So there are these very large and lucrative companies with a lot of employees that want to offer their employees as many benefits and perks as possible. And so the majority, all of the bigger companies certainly offer like yoga and fitness classes, things like that to their employees. And then, of course, the smaller ones, if they don't already, they would kind of like to. So just a matter of kind of infiltrating the right ones at the right time and, you know, locking in those positions of, yeah, like I'm the one taking care of the yoga here, you know, or signing contracts with some of these companies, or as well as like one of the studios that I work at, they also have like corporate contracting. So like sometimes they'll hook me up with a couple different jobs teaching yoga at certain corporations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. And this question actually popped up into my private Facebook community the other day. So I wonder if you can shine some light on it. Somebody was asking about, you know, how to go about getting these corporate gigs, like right off the get go, and what sort of materials you should have when you're, you know, pitching them or presenting yourself.
Yeah, definitely have, you know, have some sort of packet or, you know, flyer or something. You know, we put together a little packet of that's a folder that has like a flyer that states the, you know, benefits of yoga in the workplace and like quotes some statistics of like less absentees and, you know, like increased productivity, all the basic advantages of having your employees do yoga. So providing them with that, as well as your pricing options and your contact information, maybe putting some sort of reviews or your resume of other places that you have also done this with before. Of course, getting those first one or two are the harder ones if you don't have experience doing corporate already. But once you do, and you can reference back to like, oh, like I also have a contract with this company and that company, then it helps build, you know, it helps build their trust in you a little quicker. And being able to present that to whoever it is. So maybe those first few, you kind of luck out with somebody that you know in an HR department at a company, and being able to approach them and see, even if it's not them, but like at least they would know who to give this to. Mm-hmm. As well as, that's a big thing if you are teaching yoga, maybe other public classes, you know, mentioning it to your class as well. So that is the majority of the people in your classes, they work for companies. And if they don't have yoga being offered at their company, they probably want it because they're in that mindset. You know, if they're in your yoga class, they enjoy yoga. So they would like to bring it to their company because that would be easier and cheaper for them. So making that contact with them and seeing who in their company is kind of in charge of this. It's normally the HR department. So it's about getting that information to whoever in HR is in control of that. And then, you know, just kind of rolling the dice there and seeing if they'll give you the chance if they don't have somebody doing it already.
Yeah, definitely. That's great advice. And do you usually suggest like an email pitch or a phone call or kind of like popping by? Do you have sort of a preference with that?
Yeah, I find most of the time I'll be introduced through an email first, like an email introduction. So through that, getting the materials across, and kind of presenting everything, but also in that conversation, trying to create another avenue of communication. So whether that is getting a phone number so that you can talk to them on the phone too, or an in-person meeting being even better. But just trying to create more points of contact, because the more personal your points of contact with somebody are, the more likely they are to help you out and kind of pick you. Because even though, like, I feel like people have the desire to help people out as long as they like them. And the only way that you can get someone to like you is have like a few points of communication with them. Like there's a sales idea that you would want to have contact with somebody 7 times before asking for the sale. And that's like the highest percentage of success. If you have had like 7 different points of contact with them, whether that is, you know, a couple emails and then a phone call and maybe a couple in-person meetings. So trying to allow yourself some time to build that rapport with them so that it's more likely that they'll, you know, help you out or be able to fulfill your request.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And it's a gentle reminder as well that, like, you know, this world where we want everything to happen super fast, that sometimes you need to be patient. Like 7 points of contact isn't going to happen in one day or overnight.
Yeah. And sometimes it's, you know, you make some sort of contact and sometimes they're legitimately just not in the place to help you right now. But then fast forward like six months down the line and you get a phone call, you know, of some seed that you planted months ago, And then they're like, ready to make that move just because it's in the back of their mind. Like, oh yeah, I do know a yoga instructor or, a fitness class instructor that, sets on. So when that comes up in their meeting, in their HR meeting of like, hey, maybe we should incorporate some sort of fitness or yoga perk for our employees. And then like, you're the first thing that somebody thinks of and they, then they get your card back out or whatever, reply to your email, give you a phone call, and it just happens. It's certainly not a quick, like, definitely not just like walking into a company and then like teaching yoga there the next week. It's certainly a process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think that that is also a good reminder, like, that you don't want to close doors just because it might not be a yes right away. Like, I love the analogy of planting a seed and then you never know when that plant's going to grow. Like, it might take a couple months, it might be a couple weeks, it might be even longer, but kind of just planting those seeds and saying yes to opportunities and seeing what comes up, down the road.
Yeah, for sure.
So you mentioned that your idea behind starting your business, or one of the things you wanted out of that, was to have more balance with your schedule and to not be, in the gym or the studio like 5 a.m. to like 9 p.m. I'm curious if you've been able to find that balance, and if so, how you kind of set boundaries and prevent burnout and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so it can certainly be tough, especially in the beginning, because in the beginning, when you don't have enough clients and you're not making enough money to like actually cover all your bills, you kind of want to take whatever you can. So it's a lot harder if you don't have that, foundation of a good income. It's a lot harder to say no to somebody who wants to train at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m., past what you feel like your ideal window would be. So I kind of went through that process of taking kind of whatever I could in the beginning. But then once I reached a certain point where, okay, like I'm doing well and I'm making plenty enough money, being able to kind of either trim back or at least not take on any more clients outside of my boundaries, because most clients, it's not like I'm seeing people for a lifetime. So if maybe the average length of time that I see a client is 6 months or so, and I know, okay, well, I do have that guy at, 7 p.m., but I'd really like to be done by 7, just not promising that slot to somebody else already, like before he finishes, and then being able to kind of mold your schedule in a more in a more beneficial way. And it's really tough, like, especially as a personal trainer, like, it's tough to fill those more daytime hours because everybody wants to, most people go to work and people want to work out either before they go to work or after they go to work. So it's really easy to fill those earlier morning slots, and then it's really easy to fill those evening slots. But then just after putting in the time and just allowing more and different types of people to come to you, you start to find those few that like, oh, 11 a.m. is your ideal time to come in, or, oh, you can come in at 2. Cool. So like, it takes a little bit of time to find those people because they're not as many of them that can do those afternoon slots. But once you find them, then it's a lot easier to kind of fill your schedule and still see enough clients in a day so that you're making the money that you want to make. But also keeping on to those boundaries that make the rest of your life as happy and profitable as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that this is one of the things that's like the hardest when you're doing any type of like personal training or yoga teaching, or even, freelancing. Like, I find it's kind of the same thing with the business side of what I do. It's like, how many clients/projects can I take on? Like, what's that kind of sweet spot? And I think the thing is too, with those things, it's kind of like having those private clients is like, if they stop training with you or they stop working with you, then you need to kind of replace that income. So you never want to say no to an opportunity unless you're at the point where you're definitely making a surplus. So it's kind of always coordinating and working at it, I feel like.
Yeah. And it's like anything, the beginning stages of like really building something are going to be the most difficult. And that's when you're going to have to put in the most amount of sacrifice. But like once you you know, once you get to a certain point and things are rolling, then it's, you know, I think a big reason why people start their own business is to have more of that freedom. And some people don't understand, like, in the beginning, and maybe the first year or 2 years or however long it might take, you're going to have even less freedom than when you were working just like your corporate job or whatever, because you really have to put in the work and build that foundation. But you're doing that for the payoff in the future of then having a more solid foundation already built that then you can work off of, and then you can create your more freedom and more opportunities for yourself. But that, you know, that very first part, that 0 to 1, is always the hardest. It's, mm-hmm. you know, really, really putting in that work to make sure that you have that foundation, so that then in the future you can have more of that freedom.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. One of my yoga teacher friends and I were talking about this yesterday, actually. And she's like, you know, I think it was a lot easier when I just worked a 9 to 5. And I was like, yep, I totally feel that sometimes. But then I think that it's remembering that, you know, you're building somebody else's dream and not your own, and you don't have control over your schedule. And even during the times when, you know, you're hustling and you're saying yes to those clients that are early and late, I mean, you still have control over your schedule. It's just more challenging to kind of build up that clientele and stuff, like you said.
Mm-hmm. And I think that having that ability, and even though you're like putting in more work, it's just finding that right balance. So like something for, you know, like New Year resolution type thing for this year, that's one thing that I do want to focus on more, is having more of that balance and creating, not always feeling like there's something else that I should be doing. Because like when you are running your own business, there's always something else that you can be doing. There's always a list of a million things that you can be doing. There's always something that you can be improving on if you're spending the time working on it. And mm-hmm. you have to understand that you know, you can't just work 24/7, and without, like, if you have a normal 9 to 5 job, all of those responsibilities are confined into like when you're at work for the most part. But when that's not the case and you are an entrepreneur, you're running your own business, it's up to you to set those boundaries. So not just with your clients, but with your life at home too, when you are home, so that you're not just constantly working, but you're able to enjoy the life that you're living as well, and set the right boundaries so that you have your time for, you know, for your friends and your family, and you know, and just enjoying where you are in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I can relate to that a lot. I find that, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if this is just like the time that I worked corporate, but, you know, my email wasn't even attached to my phone at that point. So when I left the office, it was very much like I left the office, and you know, I could go home and I could do anything I wanted. Like I could go to the gym, I could cook dinner, I could watch TV all night. Those were usually what I did do. But it's so different now. Like I find, you know, my email's attached to my phone. It's like all my business emails come into that. It's like I'm on my computer like so many hours of the day where I have to be like, okay, we're actually like disconnecting and I'm not going to look at it now. And it's so much harder than it was when I worked for somebody else.
Yeah, it's because it's all up to you. So that responsibility is all on your shoulders to, you know, to build those boundaries and schedule it into your schedule, like you would schedule anything else. I got into the habit of putting into my schedule, like, okay, I'm going to spend these 3 hours, you know, working on this. And then like over here, I'll spend this time so that I know that I just have this block of time where that's what I'm doing, that's what I'm working on, and then when that's over, I won't have to worry about it anymore. And as long as I put in that time, then I'll feel good enough about it that I can wait until whenever the next scheduled block of time is that I can put my energy into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I'm sure that there's somebody else out there listening who's, you know, experienced the same thing as you and I have both gone through. Other than, you know, scheduling all these different types of things into your day, what other tips do you have for kind of creating these boundaries for yourself as an entrepreneur?
I think it's important to be clear about what those boundaries are. So it's really easy to say, you know, like, oh, I want to work less, or I want to spend more time with my family or friends. But those aren't very clear or measurable. So like when I'm coaching people, and this is a pretty popular term, I'm sure some of your listeners have heard of it before, but like SMART goals. Have you heard of this idea before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have.
Yeah. Yeah. So having something that's specific and measurable and attractive and realistic and timely. And I feel like if you're talking about a goal of creating better boundaries, I think that it should be just that, so that you can tell, so that it's measurable in some way, so that you know whether or not you're succeeding or failing at it. And then you know when you can make, you know, when you need to make more adjustments to bring things within your boundaries, or if you can be a little looser with things. I would say that would be kind of my number one tip, like know exactly what you're asking for or like trying to accomplish. Because without that, then you don't really know where you're at. You know, you're kind of just floating in space, and you're not, you can't say, okay, like I've achieved this, or I haven't yet achieved it. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, definitely. That's good advice for sure. I think that it's so important to have those things that you're working towards. And even like we were talking about before with finding your clients, like, did you set like a budget for yourself, or do you continue to set like a budget for yourself, so you know kind of like where you're working around how many classes a week you teach and how many clients you take on and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I have a number of the amount of clients, and you know, the amount of clients that I want to see in a week and the amount of classes that I'm teaching in a week. And I kind of, that's mainly how I keep track of it. So that I know, and there's some weeks where, you know, a lot of people travel, especially around here for work. People are constantly kind of in and out. So there's always somewhat of a balance going on of like, okay, like, I know this lady's going to be out of town for these 2 weeks, so like can I fill those slots? And you know, who do I kind of have waiting that I can get in here so that I can still hit the number of sessions that I'm planning on hitting and not taking a dip? But sometimes there are weeks where, yeah, I hit, you know, I don't quite get the numbers of sessions in that I wish to, and sometimes it's more. So as long as that kind of average is good. I look at it week by week, but then the monthly total is what I go by more, because within the month it has the ability to even itself out a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so can you tell me a little bit about the other aspects of Cool Wellness? I know you guys have a retreat upcoming, and you work with your partner in some aspects of the business as well, and then you also have a podcast.
Yes. So our podcast is the Kula Wellness Podcast. That's K-U-L-A is how you spell that. And that's kind of just my choice of content to create mainly. Like that's my number one choice. I don't really do the blog thing. I've attempted it, but it's not something that I enjoy as much. So I shifted my focus towards the podcast. Although my partner does the blog thing, so that kind of works out, hit it from both sides. Mm-hmm. As far as, yeah, kind of the different aspects of it, so obviously we do personal training, like health and fitness coaching. I also do nutritional counseling, and then we each teach yoga, both private sessions as well as corporate and in studios. And then my partner is a marriage family therapist. And her main focus is doing couples therapy and incorporating yoga into her couples therapy. So like she has a workshop coming up. I wish I knew the exact date, but sometime in February, that it's like a 6 week long workshop where they meet once a week for the 6 weeks. And it's specifically built for couples and like couples therapy using yoga. So that's cool to help yoga, or to use yoga to help build more connection and trust within couples. And then the other cool thing that we have going on, you mentioned our yoga retreat. We're hosting a yoga retreat in Mexico, in Oaxaca, at the end of October. That the details and dates would be on our website, coolwellness.net. But that'll just be a beautiful kind of relaxing as well as reflective retreat just before the Day of the Dead celebrations in Oaxaca. So we'll be kind of looking at and reflecting on our past, both the good and the bad, and mm-hmm. how both of those things influenced us, because I feel like it's important to not just to not ignore the bad things that happened to us, because they have equally helped shape who we are and where we're at now. So kind of using that time to look back, reflect, maybe heal some wounds that have occurred, and be more centered around the idea that who we are today has been built by everything that's happened in our past, not just the bad. Mm-hmm. So then right after our retreat, so it'll be a 5-day retreat, and then we're planning on going into the city of Oaxaca. We'll be on the beach for the retreat, but we'll go into the city of Oaxaca to also experience the festival and festivities that'll be going on there. So we're super excited for that as well.
Yeah. Is that going to be your first time doing a Day of the Dead?
Yes, it would be. Have you been there for that previously?
Yeah, I was here this year. I was in Mexico City. I don't know how Oaxaca's Day of the Dead celebration compares, but it's definitely interesting. You know, a lot of people at home were like, you know, I'd see like Snapchats and Instagram stories like, oh, Day of the Dead, you know, on Halloween. But it's very, very different down here. Like, it's a very much a family tradition. But have you seen the movie Coco?
I have not. My girlfriend did. She said it was awesome, but yeah. I did not actually see it.
Yeah, you should see it before you come down here. I feel like it gives a little bit of background around Day of the Dead, and I don't know what it's going to be like in Oaxaca, but in Mexico City, we had all these different colorful creatures, which you see mm-hmm. in the movie Coco, and you see all the different shrines around the city. And I felt like the movie, even though it's like a kid's movie, it kind of gives you this background on, you know, the celebration. So
cool. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Mm-hmm. And is this the first retreat that you guys are doing with Kula Wellness?
This will be our first Kula Wellness retreat, so I'm very excited about that.
Amazing. And I'm curious what sort of things you've learned as you've gone through the process of, you know, creating this retreat and getting it organized and that sort of thing.
That there's a lot more thoughts and aspects of it that, you know, you really have to think of every little piece of it. So we're lucky enough to connect with the owners of like a bed and breakfast homestay type thing down there, and that's how we found the location. They kind of the owners had actually taken a class that my girlfriend had taught, and they'd started talking after, and they told her about their bed and breakfast and center down there in Mexico, and that they had wanted to start hosting retreats down there. So she actually personally invited us to do that after taking one of my partner's classes. So it was really cool to have that as opposed to just reaching out to different places and trying to see where we can host a retreat, to have a place that already wanted us to come down. That was really cool, and I think a good sign for it. But then there's just like anything else, once you kind of dive into doing something, you realize that it's an endless hole that you can continue going deeper and deeper into. So there, you know, there's a whole host of aspects of it, everything from, you know, obviously having the place and figuring out the pricing and our target audience and who we're, or what the theme is going to be, you know, down to the food that we're going to be serving and, you know, the different locations that we can use to do yoga, and maybe not just at our, you know, at the center that we'll be hosting it at, but like, you know, a really nice place down the beach, or if we want to incorporate tours and different things. It's just, if you allow it to be, it can easily become overwhelming, but just really take one step at a time and kind of just look at whatever that direct next step is as much as you can. And then it will build as you go.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many things that you don't realize when you start planning it that go into like the back end of it. Because I think like, you know, you go on a retreat and everything's so awesome. And then you start planning and you're like, oh my gosh, there's so much stuff to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's amazing though. So you said you can find that at coolawellness.net?
Yes.
Okay, amazing. I'll definitely put a link for that in the show notes so listeners can go and check that out. It sounds like it's going to be amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. And so I'm curious if there's any other, you know, business lessons you've learned through your career that you want to share with listeners today.
Yeah, I have a couple things that I feel like have kept me going and that I constantly remind myself about this. So there are two things. One, I'll start. There's a quote by Reid Hoffman, who's one of the founders of LinkedIn. I might not get it word for word, but it goes something along the lines of, if you're not embarrassed by your first product, then you've launched too late. And that's kind of, obviously, that's coming from his mindset of a tech entrepreneur. But I think that it's important to not overemphasize trying to totally perfect something before you begin to share it with other people. Because a lot of, one, nothing's ever going to be perfect. So if you're just constantly waiting for that perfect product to share with everybody, you're going to hesitate for way too long and it's never actually going to get out there. But then also, like, once you start doing something and providing a specific service for people, that, like, that's when you learn the most about it, you know, like, so you'll get the closest to perfection once you actually start doing it and sharing it with other people, as opposed to just, you know, sitting at your desk with it in a notebook or however you're working on it. So that would be one thing, just to kind of just go for it. Don't wait and don't think like, oh, it's not good enough and whatever. Just go for it and put it out there. Mm-hmm. And it'll get better as you go. And people will be grateful that you did that and that you shared that with you. And even that initial product, it will still help plenty of people. And it'll help you get better at doing that.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then the other thing I would say is, like, a lot of times I'll look at fellow peers or, like, people, I guess not even peers, but people who are a lot further along in their journey than where I'm at. You know, the people who I really look up to and aspire to be. Who I just feel like are crushing it and are really, like, providing an awesome service. And, like, that's kind of where I want to be. And I think it's important to remind myself and realize, like, oh, they're, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years into this, you know? And it's really just about putting that time in, you know? Like, if you keep doing it and if you stay consistent and you keep adjusting and making the small changes along the way, like, eventually it will continue to grow, and that's when you'll reach the higher levels. Like, there's nobody super successful in any business in the first, you know, couple of years or even handful of years that you're doing it. It's about staying consistent and staying on the course and then, you know, reaping the benefits as you go, but not getting too discouraged in the beginning, thinking that you'll never get there. Just keep your head down, keep working, and it will eventually come.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree with those more. I've heard that quote by Reid Hoffman. I don't know if I knew it was by him or not, but I've heard that before too. And I remember my boyfriend and I started our travel podcast back in 2014 when we got home from South America. And I knew nothing about podcasting, like, literally nothing. We, like, ordered microphones and I was like, can you even just start doing this? Like, I kind of thought that you had to have, like, a degree or, like, permission from somebody. And we were like, we should listen to our episodes just so we can, like, you know, get feedback and be better at it. And we were driving one day and we turned on one of our episodes and it was like, we could not listen to our own voices. Like, I've edited so much of myself talking now that it doesn't make me, like, you know, feel queasy anymore. But it was just, like, so, like, oh my God, like, I can't listen to this. And I had to turn it off and just remember being like, oh man, we suck so much. And now we're, like, almost 200 episodes in, and I feel like I can look back at those episodes and see how far we've come, which is really amazing. So, yeah, I definitely love
that. Yeah, that's awesome. I remember, like, the first, I don't even know how many, but the first few podcasts that I recorded, I literally just recorded them straight into my phone. And I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I recorded them into my phone, and then I didn't know anything about audio editing either. So, like, I attempted to, you know, make them sound a little better in, you know, some audio editing software, but, like, I had no idea what I was doing. So if I go back and listen to the first few of them or whatever, or sometimes just one sneaks in there where it's like, oh, this sound quality is terrible or whatever, like, that's the reason why, but it's okay. Like, that's just how it turned out and whatever. If you don't want to listen to that episode because there's too much static in the background or our voices sound a little bit like robots or whatever, then fine, like, move on to the next one. That's that's just how it is. Like, that's what actually happened. And you know, you're, if you do listen from the beginning or whatever, you'll kind of see that evolution and the learning process as well, which I think is something that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I would totally agree. I think it's the same thing, like, looking back at, like, the first yoga class you ever taught. Like, I just remember being so nervous and feeling so awkward and, like, trying to figure out walking around and adjusting and cues and pacing and, like, sequencing and, like, oh, what did I do after this? Like, okay, let's, like, put them in child's pose so I can, like, take a breath myself because I'm freaking out.
Yeah, every time you do something, you get better at it. So, like, just keep doing it, you know? Even if, no matter how that first product was, like, whether it was actually horrendous or it was good, like, you know, 5 years down the line, if you continue doing that, you're going to be able to do that so much better. So there's the, you know, the idea is for there to always be growth. Mm-hmm. So just keep doing it, keep putting in that work, and you'll see the, you know, final product pay off.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. And I think, too, your second point as well, I really love. I think that in a world where we're surrounded by social media, it's really easy to get caught up in, you know, how many followers somebody has or how quality their photos are or what, you know, crazy positions they can put their body in. And I feel like, you know, this is something that I kind of experience in my private community a little bit, and with yoga teachers that I talk to, is like this mentality that, like, oh, I don't have 50,000 followers, so, you know, I'm never going to be a good yoga teacher, I'm never going to be a popular yoga teacher, make enough money. And I think it's just remembering that, like, all this stuff happens with time. Like, I remember when I first started working at the yoga studio that I'm now a studio manager for, and I've been working for them for just over 3 years. One of my interview questions was, you know, how's the podcast going? And this is my travel podcast because MBOM didn't exist at that time. And I was like, yeah, we're getting about like 50 downloads a day. And I was like, rounding up a little bit at that point.
Yeah.
But it's crazy to think, like, you know, we get so much more than that. Like, we get like between 500 and 1500 a day now. So it's like just
crazy.
That's amazing. Yeah, definitely. And it's just, it was consistent work. Like, we just put out episodes every single week. And it definitely didn't happen overnight. And I just remember being like, whoa, there's like 50 people in this world that are listening to me talk. Like, what?
Yeah.
So I think just, yeah, slow and steady wins the race. Just keep doing what you're doing and just put the work in every single day and it'll pay off.
Agreed.
Amazing. So where else can people go to find you other than coolawellness.net?
Yeah, we're also on Instagram at coolawellness. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/coolawellnesssj. And then my personal Instagram handle is thefitcoop. And I think that's, yeah, those places. I mean, obviously, if you go to the website, coolawellness.net, you'll be able to navigate your way to any of those other places as well. So that would be a good central hub to start at if you'd like.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today, Justin. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, to you as well.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Justin Cooper from Coola Wellness. Definitely go and check out what they're up to over at coolawellness.net. And if you're looking for a trip down to Oaxaca, go check out their retreat. It sounds like it's going to be an amazing combination between relaxing on the beach and also getting to experience a really cool cultural thing in Mexico. As always, you can find show notes up on the website at www.mbomyoga.com. You can send me an email if you have any questions, comments, or feedback at info@mbomyoga.com. You can find me on social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga and join the private Facebook community at Yoga Business Badasses. Thank you so much to the sponsor for today's episode of the podcast, Fave Yogis, FAVYOGIS. Make sure you go download the app. It's completely free. Give it a try and, you know, let me know what you think of it. I think it's been a really great addition to the yoga world, but I'd be really keen to hear what you think of it as a yoga teacher. Again, Yoga Business Bootcamp and the teacher training upcoming with Yoga Goddess Academy are out there. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. As always, thank you so much for listening and namaste.